Welcome to our podcast series, Maintaining Healthy Nutrition in Pediatric IBD Patients. During this series, we will discuss the important role that diet plays in the management of IBD, focusing on maintenance of good nutrition, enteral nutritional therapy, as well as the specific carbohydrate diet. You will hear from medical professionals as well as two parents who have firsthand experience implementing enteral nutritional therapy and the specific carbohydrate diet. This series is sponsored by the NASPGHAN Foundation for Children's Digestive Health and Nutrition Foundation, along with the North American Society for Pediatric Gastroenterology, Hepatology, and Nutrition. A special thank you to the Woodward Crohn's and Colitis Foundation for providing support for this series. I'm Dr. Lindsay Albenberg, chair of the program and a pediatric gastroenterologist at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. Today's podcast focuses on maintenance of good nutrition. Our faculty today are myself, along with Nyla Williamson and Kimberly Brawley, both clinical pediatric dietitians based at Seattle Children's Hospital. So we are going to talk about a very important topic, which is maintenance of good nutrition in inflammatory bowel disease. And I have with me Kim Brawley, who is a dietitian at Seattle Children's Hospital, and Nyla Williamson, who is also a dietitian at Seattle Children's Hospital. Nyla, we'll start with you. So inflammatory bowel disease, Crohn's disease, and ulcerative colitis, why is there such a close link between these diseases and nutrition?
Yeah, so inflammatory bowel disease, just like the name states, is a disease of the bowel and the GI tract. And the GI tract is where food travels through and where digestion takes place. So when food is eaten, it travels through the inflamed bowel, and this can lead to IBD symptoms. So this leads patients to often associate eating with symptoms, and that's why this disease has just such a close link with nutrition. With Crohn's disease, not always, but often it affects the small bowel. The function of the small bowel is for absorption of nutrients, and when it's inflamed, this can lead to poor absorption and poor digestion, which can cause food particles to be delivered to the colon or the large bowel that aren't completely digested, and that can lead to diarrhea and changes in gut bacteria. With ulcerative colitis, typically the small intestine works normally, but the large intestine or the colon is inflamed, and that can lead to poor absorption of water because that is the function of the colon, is absorption of water and electrolytes. So when it's inflamed, it can result in more symptoms like diarrhea or weight loss, or in severe cases, electrolyte abnormalities.
Perfect. And Kim, you know, we see a lot of pediatric patients who are newly diagnosed with inflammatory bowel disease who present to us in a malnourished state. So how does IBD cause poor nutrition?
Great question. And one of the first things I speak to my families about oftentimes is you're not the only one with weight loss. So this is so common with inflammatory bowel disease. Kids in general have increased calorie requirements because they're growing, and then you add an inflammatory process on top of that, and their calorie needs can be twice that of normal. In addition to that, the symptoms that one experiences with UC or Crohn's disease, like abdominal pain, mouth sores, running to the bathroom after meals, medications, changing the way a food can taste, those can all lead to decreased intake of food in general. And lastly, there's also decreased absorption, as Nyla mentioned, with the inflammation. There's also decreased absorption when one needs a bowel resection or surgical removal of a portion of their GI tract. This can lead to decreased absorption of nutrients from the diarrhea, from fistulas if they're draining, and just because of their increased metabolic requirements.
Now, you know, we know that good nutrition obviously is important for everyone, and that nutrition is particularly important in a whole host of disease processes. But Nyla, why should we care so much about nutrition in IBD? Why is it so important?
it's very important for the IBD patient. I think probably more so for them than it is for a healthy individual, just because of what we have talked about, that they have poorer absorption of what they eat. And so they just aren't getting 100% of the nutrient content of the food that they're eating, which makes what they do eat really important. So healthy food choices are those that are nutrient dense, you know, high in vitamins and minerals, so that the patient can really maximize their nutrient intake to prevent deficiencies while they're not absorbing everything, you know, 100%. Also, two healthy food choices can go a long way to minimize their symptoms and go a long way to improve their growth and healing.
Great. Yeah, I totally agree with all of that. You know, one thing as a provider that really we see essentially on a daily basis are parents and children wanting to know what they should eat. So, you know, particularly the patients and the families where there's been a new diagnosis of inflammatory bowel disease, I think one of the first questions that people ask is, what should I be feeding my child? Should we be changing his or her diet? So, Kim, I'll ask you your thoughts on changing the diet in people who are newly diagnosed with IBD.
Mm-hmm. When I first meet with kids after they're newly diagnosed, we go through just a general nutrition education. So, and they always start with that. What do I? And we need to avoid or limit certain foods, but it's not as simple or straightforward as just giving a list of foods to eat and foods to avoid. We know from nutrition studies and research that it's not exact, and we're still figuring out how diet plays a role in inflammatory bowel disease. There's still quite a bit of research going on in this area, and we know that nutrition therapy can work for certain patients, so we're confident that it plays a role to some degree. While there's no evidence that certain foods directly affect the inflammation, we know that certain foods can kind of aggravate the symptoms and worsen the abdominal pain and diarrhea, for example.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I mean, there have been studies that have shown that up to 75% of people who have IBD can identify foods that bother them, so foods that aggravate their symptoms, but there's not necessarily a direct link that we've been able to make between those foods and inflammation, but it's certainly an area that needs to be explored. We talk a lot about the healthy diet in general. So, Nyla, I'm wondering your thoughts on, is there a healthy diet for inflammatory bowel disease?
Yeah, to go into a few more specifics about, you know, what we actually mean when we say eating a healthy diet. You know, when I talk with families about eating a healthy diet for IBD, what I picture is a diet that's very balanced and includes all the food groups. You know, for protein, choosing proteins that are lean, such as poultry or eggs or fish, beans, fruits, vegetables, whole grains are all part of a healthy diet. Also, too, dairy is part of a healthy diet as well. We do recommend that dairy be eaten in moderation, so meeting your daily recommendations for dairy products, which is 3 servings a day to meet your calcium needs. Also, too, though, if dairy seems to bother you and be more of like a trigger food that might worsen your symptoms, trying lactose-free dairy products to see if those are tolerated better. In general, too, a healthy diet would try to avoid eating packaged foods as much as possible and reading food labels. So a lot of ingredients on the foods that you're eating that you don't recognize and where you can't pronounce, consider choosing a different product or comparing it to a similar product and choosing the one that has ingredients that are more recognizable. The fiber in our foods is also a healthy part of, it's also a part of a healthy diet. So fiber can be found in fruits, vegetables, and whole grains, and they have many health benefits, including the production of short-chain fatty acids by the bacteria in your large intestine, short-chain fatty acids serve as a fuel for the cells in the colon and can even have anti-inflammatory properties. So a healthy diet, again, includes all the food groups, lots of fiber, limits packaged food, and processed foods as well, including like processed meats or high fat and greasy foods, foods with a lot of added sugar or artificial sweeteners, you know, kind of things that come in packages and have a long shelf life.
Yeah, I think the fiber topic is a really interesting one because I think frequently there's a lot of confusion because patients are counseled to cut back on fiber when the disease is very active, and sometimes, you know, they continue to leave fiber out of the diet even when they're in remission. And so I think that's such an important point, that fiber may not be very well tolerated when there's a lot of inflammation going on, but it probably leads to a much healthier gut environment and is something that's probably beneficial in the diet, that we do think is beneficial in the diet, particularly when patients are in remission or when the disease is under reasonably good control. And Kim, I'm interested to hear on, you know, we mentioned that a lot of people with IBD identify foods that worsen their symptoms. So are there patterns that you've seen over the years? Are there foods that people should limit during a flare?
Kim usually comes having identified at least a couple foods. You may have mentioned this earlier, a couple foods that they don't tolerate as well. They seem to not tolerate many foods when the inflammation is really bad. So talking about foods that can worsen symptoms, I think it's very delicate, and you have to differentiate between foods that can worsen symptoms but not worsen the inflammation. So I think that's the biggest take-home message I try to give the families when I'm first meeting with them. Certain foods that I've found and that we've known just over the years from reports by families are kind of what Nyla mentioned, foods that are high in fiber. Even though they're good for us, they may not be as well tolerated when inflammation is present. Foods that are also high in sugar, so concentrated juices, sodas, desserts, sometimes Jellos, and even fruits in excess can worsen abdominal pain or other symptoms one may be experiencing. Greasy and fried foods. This is a very common one that I hear. Kids say, yeah, if I have fried chicken nuggets or chicken strips, I kind of get stomach pain. And we mentioned the sweetened beverages. Also lactose, whether it's because of lactose intolerance or just because of lactose, the sugar itself can also, it seems to induce a lot of symptoms or even cause a lactose intolerance, especially when inflammation is present.
And what about, I think a lot of people are told to avoid things that could potentially get stuck. Can you mention things that might not be digested as well or might cause a problem, especially if people have narrowings of the bowel or fistula?
Yeah, exactly that. Those are from, especially with patients with Crohn's, we are more careful with kind of very high fiber foods like the raw vegetables, the vegetables you can put in water and they don't dissolve, seeds, nuts, and especially popcorn for those that have strictures or the narrowing, as you mentioned. We educate that to avoid those foods until we see some relief of the inflammation or improvement of those other complications. As we also counsel on just preventing as many food avoidances and eliminations as possible. So as one feels better, we encourage them or more themselves to start adding back fruits and vegetables in small amounts to see how they do. So they can kind of get a confidence back that they tolerate those foods. And long term, we encourage them to eat fresh fruits and vegetables, whole grains. The balanced diet that Nyla mentioned is essential for the bugs in the gut, and to have the more variety, the better. We're really looking into the microbiome and how that's affected by diet, and we find that whole grains, fruits, and vegetables are very beneficial for the bacteria.
And how do you, you know, we sort of at my institution, we recommend that our patients meet with a dietitian when they're first diagnosed with IBD. What do you think about that, and how frequently should patients follow with a dietitian?
Yeah, I definitely recommend meeting with a dietitian. And the reason why is because we're all specialized in our own area, and part of our multidisciplinary team at Seattle Children's Hospital includes the doctor, dietitian, social worker, psychologist. So I think every new diagnosed patient should meet with each person on the team is essential to at least have some general information and a resource that they know they can go to for questions. I think it's especially important because to meet with a dietitian because it's not a straightforward disease, and diet especially. We've talked about how closely it or how large of a role it plays in the disease. So it can kind of, we can help clarify questions and some of the information that families pull from the internet or from their aunt and uncle, or from grandma, can be a lot that they receive at once.
I think that's a great point. I think, you know, in this day and age, I think technology, people will go to technology, will go to the internet to ask questions about diet. And so I think it's great not only to have a physician that you can go to ask those types of questions, but also a dietitian who, you know, obviously are great sources of information. One thing that I have found is that when we're newly diagnosing children with inflammatory bowel disease, I think calories can be a challenge because patients just are feeling crummy. And so, Nyla, I'd like to ask you, so what if kids are newly diagnosed, they're not feeling well, and they're just struggling to get enough calories to either maintain their weight, or frequently when patients are newly diagnosed, we need to maintain, but we also need them to gain weight to get back to where they were before?
Yeah, that's a very good question because it's very common. I mean, we see this all the time. I mean, it's related to the symptoms. So, you know, you don't feel well. You're in the bathroom a lot. So they really, you know, motivate you to be eating. Also, too, the inflammation and the symptoms can just make you get full sooner. So we talk a lot about strategies to deal with being full sooner before you've really eaten a, you know, your typical sized portion. So we talk about rather than eating large meals that are spread far apart, trying to eat more small, frequent meals, lots of like relaxation during meals, and just making the mealtime not stressful and just kind of a low-key environment. We talk about eating really slowly and chewing your food really well because that's the first step in the digestion. And so chewing your food can really go a long way to help a GI tract that's inflamed to be able to digest and absorb even better. And then lastly, particularly when people are getting full early, we talk about drinking your liquids in between meals rather than with your meal so that those aren't making you feel full. It's only the food that you're eating that's filling you up, and then drinking the liquids in between. When those strategies aren't enough, we also talk about oral supplements, which are nutritional shakes or nutritional formula, and trying to incorporate some of these in between meals or with meals just to maximize calorie intake. They're relatively high in calories for the volume of food that it is, and so it can really go a long way to maximize calorie and energy intake in someone that is getting full soon so that they can get the energy that they need to grow appropriately. And lastly, I think when those interventions just aren't enough to keep a child eating enough and growing well, we do discuss using nasogastric tubes to supplement calories to help them grow appropriately.
Yes, and just in case people don't know, the nasogastric tubes are those little teeny tiny feeding tubes. They're flexible and they're like the size of a piece of spaghetti that go in the nose and go down into the stomach, and you can give formula calories during the day or even overnight while patients are sleeping. So it's a good way, and it's sometimes required for patients who just can't get enough, especially in the beginning. Another question that I get asked all the time by patients and families is, whether they need to take anything extra. So do patients with IBD need extra vitamins or supplements? Kim, what's your feeling on that?
Yeah, this is an important question to discuss with your doctor and the dietitian, and based on each kid is different. So some kids do wonderfully at eating a balanced diet, but other kids we know are more selective, and maybe they don't eat vegetables or fruits, and we may recommend that they start a multivitamin, at least a child's multivitamin. Sometimes additional supplements like calcium, most need vitamin D. We're all pretty deficient where we live. Vitamin B12 sometimes, or folic acid is one that's often prescribed by the doctors for certain medications that a patient may be on. We try and encourage getting all the vitamins and minerals that one needs through their food, but there's always a time and place that sometimes a supplement is indicated.
Well, great. This was really great. I think we just crammed a ton of information into a short period of time. There's obviously, I think we, all three of us, could go on and on about nutrition and IBD, but I think we really highlighted the important topics. I think it's important to let the audience know and just to talk about that there's not one specific diet that works for all patients with inflammatory bowel disease. You know, we mentioned that certain people find that certain foods bother them or exacerbate symptoms, and it may not be that those foods aren't tolerated forever. So it may be that there are certain foods that are not tolerated when the disease is very active, but they can be added back into the diet when the disease calms down. And so I think it's extremely important that there is ongoing nutrition counseling throughout the course of the disease, constantly reassessing. And we don't have time to mention right now, but there are other sources of information and other podcasts on dietary therapies for IBD, which I think are also very important and should be prescribed in certain situations for the appropriate patient. So Kim and Nyla, I can't thank you enough for joining me, and I think we've really shed some light on maintenance of good nutrition in inflammatory bowel disease. Thanks for listening to this episode in the podcast series on maintaining healthy nutrition in pediatric IBD patients. For more information, please go to www.gikids.org. I'm Dr. Lindsay Aldenberg.